Welcome back, man. It's nice to actually do the podcast in person again.
Yes, it's been like 2 weeks or three in a week in a row. I don't know. 2 weeks.
Yeah.
More like 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think it's been two. But I saw that you posted the video of your, like, the She Happens with Vincent. And who's the lady you do it with?
Her name is Corinna, or as we call her, Coco.
Coco. Wait, like Corina?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. It's a nice name.
And she's the kind of, that's basically the idea of the podcast, is kind of, we have three perspectives on winter sports, mm-hmm. him being an active athlete,
yeah,
who's an Olympic gold medalist and very successful in the world within the World Cup.
He's an Olympic gold medalist?
Yes. He won in 2018 in Korea. He won gold with the German team.
That's insane, dude. Imagine, yeah. There's like three or four, there's definitely at least two Olympic gold medalists in Oberstdorf.
Yeah, probably a few more.
That's insane, like from all this one village. Like from Germany in general, I expect that. But to be all from this same small village is crazy.
But it's, yeah, because these kind of, especially in winter sports, if you look at Summer Olympics, it might spread a lot more all over Germany where the people come from.
Summer Olympics.
Mm-hmm. But because you can track and field, for example, everywhere in Germany.
Yeah.
But if you want to be a ski jumper, there's like four places in Germany where you can practice that. So obviously, right. more people come from smaller towns that have those kind of facilities, etc.
Yeah,
or those possibilities. You want to be a skier? You have a huge advantage if you live somewhere like in Oberstdorf,
where all the mountains are.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Did you ever watch Eddie the Eagle?
I didn't watch it, but a friend of mine was when they shot in Oberstdorf. When I was shooting in Oberstdorf, she was, or basically, she's a real good friend of mine. She's the sister of a good friend of mine. And she was, her job on set, well, I don't know how she got that job, was to be kind of the personal assistant of Hugh Jackman.
Really?
Yeah.
What did she say about it?
That he was super kind, super sweet person, super interested in, I don't know, local culture and what's going on there, etc.
That's awesome. I can believe that.
The wholesome Hugh Jackman stories you want to hear.
He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah,
totally. I feel like he's a very divisive actor. I feel like people either love him or they hate him. You know, in terms of him, like, I think he was perfect for Wolverine.
Yeah,
you know, sure. that's just that kind of role that he's just perfect in. Like, Logan's a great movie and all the Wolverine stuff. Yeah. Like, love it or hate it, he's pretty good in that role. But then you have this like whole other comedy musical side of him, you know, there's Les Mis, of course, which is really highly debated if it's good or not. But then there's this, what's the one that like about the, I think it's like the Barnaby, not Barnaby, the circus, the one where he's doing the circus.
Yeah.
The Greatest Show, the greatest,
there was something,
the Greatest
Barnaby.
Showman. I think it's the Greatest Showman.
Something like that. Yeah.
And I didn't even see that, but that's another thing too, where like, I feel like that just bombed and left the ethos. And then you see some people who are just in love with the music and love like the whole story of it or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's like the semi true story of the real, oh, man, what's that circus? The something brothers, the Barnsley, Barble. I don't remember.
I want to say Beverly Brothers, but that's an,
it's something like that.
But Beverly Brothers is a David Bowie song.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. It's probably not the circus guys. But you never know. You never know. But I remember I saw that movie. Yeah, go ahead.
Baker Boys? No, that's another movie.
No, I think it's like the Barnable.
But the Barnable Brothers.
The Barnable Gargle Brothers. I don't remember.
No, but I have not seen Eddie the Eagle.
I mean, it's not a great movie.
Yeah,
It's cool to see Oberstdorf in there.
Yeah, but the weird thing is, they've been shooting in Oberstdorf and made Oberstdorf look like the Olympic facilities of Calgary in Canada from 1988, I guess.
Oh, that's where the location was supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. So,
oh, okay.
So Oberstdorf really does not look like Oberstdorf back in the day, but it was the set to look like what Calgary looked back then.
I'm surprised that Oberstdorf allowed them to not only shoot in general, but to change things or like, you know, set dress things for a film. Just, I mean, of course, everyone loves publicity and I'm sure the city got a lot of money to do it. But I feel like your hometown is very, like, it's hard to build new buildings. It's hard to get zoning. It's hard to like do anything progressive there because they're like, no, this land is ancient. It's traditional. It's respected. And like, there's nothing wrong with that. But I feel like it's very hard for, I'm surprised they could shoot a movie there, basically.
Yeah, you must not underestimate the factor of it's a movie about ski jumping.
Yeah, that's, I mean, they do love that. That's a big thing.
Plus publicity. Yeah, everyone loves publicity, but it's good publicity for tourism. And Oberstdorf lives off tourism.
That's true.
That's the same kind of reason you could say that they will host the Nordic World Championships this winter, which doesn't quite work out because there's
they're gonna host the Nordic World Championships.
Like ski jumping, cross country skiing, and Nordic combination.
Oh, okay.
They already had that back in 2005. They were hosting it, and they hosted again. And their goal is basically for the region that this brings a lot of publicity. I don't know, great views, great mountains, great facilities. People watch it on TV. Hey, let's go on holiday there.
Do you think that the people from the town freaked out when they saw, like, because I know there's that, there's two cinemas in Oberstdorf?
Yeah.
There's like that one Kino, which has the great restaurant.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's like the smaller one.
Yeah.
Do you think they both just loved playing that movie in the, in their own cinema?
I'm totally sure.
They must have been like, oh, it's 18 weeks in the cinema.
Yeah. You got to know the smaller one. There are not a, what do you call it? Program Kino? I don't know. They have no deal with...
like no distribution deal.
Yeah.
Distribution
deal. It's not like, okay, you got to play this movie from week X to week Y.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But they can choose a lot of movies. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's awesome.
And say the and but that also leads to that they play a lot of movies for like years. The original French movie... What's the English title? In Germany, it's Ziemlich Beste Freunde. Almost Friends? I don't.
Is it the one with the black guy who takes care of the guy in the wheelchair? I think they call that the... Something like Invincible?
Yeah, but you know the movie.
Yeah.
And they played it for like...
They remade it in America with Kevin Hart and Bryan Cranston.
Super bad.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
But a kind of a weird combo.
Weird combination.
Kevin Hart and Bryan Cranston. No, but they played that movie for like 2 years.
Really?
In that cinema, yeah.
Because, it, I mean, it must have just kept selling, right?
Yeah.
That's why. I mean, if I could run my own cinema and I could play anything I wanted, that's hard. That's actually really difficult, I think, to not have those. I mean, of course, you don't want all the rules, but if I had my own cinema and I could choose anything, I would probably play things that people wouldn't come keep buying every week. So it's funny how they can survive playing what they want to play. They're like, well, everyone here just loves this French movie, so I'm just going to keep playing it.
Yeah, but I think as far as I know, they're financed by the community of Oberstdorf, by the city.
Oh, okay. So they're funded by the people anyway.
As far as I know.
If I was funded by the city, man, I would have, Indiana Jones marathon, Back to the Future marathon. The Matrix trilogy, of course. Lord of the Rings, director's cut, over a whole weekend.
Yes, sir.
You know, like every weekend. I would have... There's some cinemas that do like the... They do all 8 Harry Potter films, like throughout a week. I love that too. I mean, I'm not like the world's biggest fan, but I think it's great to have a saga you can go enjoy in the cinema. Yeah. Star Wars.
Or like playing all Bond movies in a row.
Oh, all the Bond movies? Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
I would do all of that.
But talking about that, there is such a thing in Munich. You know, I bet you've been there, obviously. Museum Lichtspiele, cinema.
With Rocky Horror Picture Show?
They play Rocky Horror Picture Show all year. I know it's not just...
It's like every weekend, right?
Yeah, it's not just a movie. They make a, I don't know, more like...
It's a whole experience.
Yeah, experience out of it. But they have one big room just...
Just for that.
Just for that. And they played...
Crazy.
Year in, year out.
Have you been there like for the screening at Museum Lichtspiele?
No, I've never
I went there.
How was it?
I went there with Efi and some friends. It was someone's part of someone's birthday present, I think, or someone's just visiting. But I wouldn't say that we dressed up in like full drag, but we did dress up in that vein. You know, I wore a wig and like something kind of feminine, and someone else wore, you know, we had like makeup on and just like funny and like getting into it. And then you show up there. And when you get to the front, I mean, you walk in, they pretty much know what you're going to see. You know, it'd be funny if I walked in, I was like, I'd like to see Osage, August Osage County or whatever.
It would be super funny to dress up and then go in there. Yeah, 2 tickets, please, for Transformers 3.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, can we see Marriage Story? Just like a super serious family drama. And you go in and then they give you like a box, or like you can pay extra with your ticket for this box. And it's like, you get some snacks and a drink that comes with it. But then you also have, I think there's some festivities that take place in the film. Like there's some traditions where there's certain moments where you throw things at the screen, or there's moments where you dance, or you have something in your hand, and they put all these little toys and like amenities with it. And then, so we saw it and it was a pretty,
have you seen it before?
Yeah, I saw it before. It's really big in New Orleans. Like around Halloween, they always play it.
Funny thing, I've never seen it, but I got the soundtrack on vinyl here.
It's cool. I mean, the songs are great. Yeah. The songs are great. My favorite Rocky Horror Picture Show story. Well, just quickly to finish the one in Munich. We saw it and there were some people in the crowd with us and they danced and sang along. And it was really sweet and fun and cool. But the best Rocky Horror Picture Show experience I ever had was in New Orleans. I was in college and I was hanging out with like a kind of a new group of friends. Yeah. There were some people that I wanted to be friends with very much. They were like the cool kids in my opinion. And I was easing into that group. And then I had a couple of friends with me who I love dearly and I still like them, but they were a bit more shy, a bit more closed off. And I was getting to that point in my college life where I really wanted to like open up and explore and just be kind of scared and like exposed to things I hadn't seen before. And I was in that weird middle zone, you know, of change.
Yeah.
So I was with the older friends and we met at this house party. And the goal was that, okay, we're going to go to, I believe, Tulane University. They hosted lots of cool free stuff. I saw stand-up comedy shows. I saw Mac DeMarco for free. Like they hosted all these great things there. It's all
nice.
It's a very wealthy school for lawyers and doctors and they host all this great stuff. So we said, okay, great. Oh, they're going to do a screening of Rocky Horror at the auditorium. We should go. So of course, you know, we're having a few drinks and people are partying and eventually it's time to go. So maybe it's like a midnight screening or something. So we're all a bit tipsy and we're carrying drinks over in a bag and we go on the campus and you see all these people in crazy costumes walking over to the auditorium. And when you get there, it's like an animal house, man. It's wild. It's really crammed with people. And in this corona world, I can't even remember this feeling right now, but it was so crammed with people. And it was like sweaty and humid and people are all in like, you know, dripping makeup and wigs and drag and heels and fingernail polish and everyone's drunk. And it's this crazy, crazy vibe, you know, this fun college spirit, like anything could happen.
Yeah.
And we got in. And immediately, once we got to our seats in the auditorium, one of the girls that we were with just drank too much too early. And she just hunched over in her seat with her head between her legs. And she didn't get up until we left.
But at least she got up then.
At least she didn't die. Yeah. She just leaned over and she just hunched and she just fell asleep like with her shoulders on her knees, just like that. But we made sure she was okay. And then we had a few friends and then the show was starting. And the coolest thing was it was projected on this big screen. And since it was an auditorium, there was a stage in front of the screen.
Yeah.
And then people came out in the exact costumes of the movie and were on the stage acting out the scenes with the movie live on the stage. I had never seen that before.
That's crazy.
So it's a play and a movie at the same time.
It's like a cover band, but you show the original music video or a live performance of the original band.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a cover band performing like a Beatles video from the 60s or something like at the same time. And it was so crazy. They had all the same dancing and the singing. And of course, everyone in the crowd is singing along and like chanting and going nuts. And I'll never forget. This is my favorite moment from the whole evening. My friend Derek, who was the most shy of all of us, was uncertain if he wanted to go. He was a bit like quiet, a bit reserved, but he had been drinking. He was having fun. And all of a sudden, somewhere about halfway through the show, people from the stage start coming out into the audience and interacting with the students, right?
Yeah.
And some girl who's wearing like this weird stripped off like leather bra thing with like a white silky shirt that's all sweaty hanging off her shoulders. She comes over to him and he can tell like in his eyes that he's really drunk, but he hasn't like broken free yet. But when she comes up to him, she has this whipped cream can, you know, this like kind of like thing. She takes it and she just goes up to him and she says, "Do you want whipped cream?" And he's like, yeah. And he opens up his mouth for her to squirt it in, but she squirts it between her breasts right there, like on the bra line,
mm-hmm.
pushes them together around his face. And then it's like at a strip club or something. And he just like kind of goes like, comes out and he's like, "This is awesome." And he takes off his shirt. And he stands on the seats and whips his shirt around like it's on like a helicopter. And I was like, Derek has found himself. It was amazing, man. I'll always attribute Rocky Horror to that evening. I loved that night so much. It was so much fun.
Believe that.
That was such a good one. Oh, man. But I can't believe you haven't seen it before. Like, ever?
No.
Oh, man. But then again, we've had these conversations.
But I was introduced to it as a form of, I don't know, musical.
Right.
And I really hate musicals. I really hate them. So, or maybe it's a bit paradox because I played in the kind of big band for two musicals.
Mm-hmm.
And that was super fun because the arrangements were super fun. We had a great band, a few very talented guys and girls in the brass section, some strings, etc., like huge band, and that was super fun. But they filmed it kind of professionally, and I didn't even find watch that. I didn't even get to watch a replay of the musical I was part of just because I hate musicals so much.
Oh, well, you were scarred when you were young. So
funny
of course,
thing, little shout out here. M94.5 has a new podcast, which is about musicals.
And you will not be listening to it.
Actually, it is a great podcast.
Oh, what's it called?
It's called Zweitbesetzung.
Okay.
It basically translates to second cast.
Okay.
Like on Broadway, you not only have one cast because you play so many shows.
Oh,
kind of a backup cast. What do you call it?
Like the understudies or the stand-ins or...
You have
the varsity and you have the junior varsity, like with sports. You have like the main players and then you have the ones that rotate in.
Exactly.
To keep the first ones from getting too tired.
And the joke only works in German because there are two people, Zweit, Besetzung.
Oh, okay.
That's a thing. And in their trailer, they already spoke up to people like me who really hate musicals. And they have a great idea and great storytelling and great music journalistic points at it. But I still hate musicals.
But wait, but how many musicals have you seen? I don't love every musical, but there's obviously some amazing ones. Have you ever seen The Wizard of Oz?
Huh?
The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
You've seen it.
Yeah.
You hate it?
I wouldn't say I hate each single musical I've seen.
Okay.
I hate the form itself.
Okay. Well, have you seen... Oh, okay. Well, does Broadway count? Or no? You just don't like filmed musicals?
No, also in like...
What about like Hamilton, for example? Hamilton's technically a musical production.
Yeah.
You don't have to like Hamilton. Enough people who like it already.
I think it still would be a different experience if I would have ever been to Broadway and had seen Hamilton
It live, yeah.
I accept that totally.
That's fair.
I've seen a kind of screened version and it was like, still, yeah.
You saw the Disney Plus, like the original one with the original cast?
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't care for it so much.
I don't know. I
liked it more than I thought I would. Yeah. I went in thinking, oh my God. everyone won't shut up about this play. It's probably going to be so cheesy because it's going to be like the Big Bang Theory, How I Met Your Mother of
musicals.
Yeah, it was like great. Yeah. The top cream, whatever of musicals, but it was great. It was amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, of course.
You know. I mean, in my opinion, in musicals, you could take great writers, great actors, great musicians, and great people for writing the music, etc. But still, I don't know. In my experience, obviously, I don't have seen every single musical, and maybe I've missed out on this experience of really being in a great production with a great cast, etc. But in my opinion, if in this combination of acting and playing music and singing, they never make it to take the best out of every single world. It's always kind of a compromise that I don't like.
I see what you're saying. Like,
you know, like
the music can be great, but maybe the acting is not going to be so good then.
Yeah, that's one point. Plus, I don't know, in some musicals, you have a great storyline and you have great actors. And they really create some tension and get to a point where you might have a plot twist or whatever. And it's great storytelling, great acting, whatever. And then comes a mediocre song. I'm super fucked up by that. I don't want to have that. Just tell me the story and give me the music afterwards.
I mean, for sure, in some musicals, that's bound to happen. That's bound to happen.
Yeah. Plus, what really might be a thing with that, and I know that is basically not real, musicals, but I don't know. I don't want to see one more performance of Cats, for example.
Oh, well, come on, man. Like, no one's forcing you to go watch Cats, you know?
But I will not do it. I can't stand it.
But you didn't go see the floppy cinema one. So when have you been forced to watch Cats?
I've never really been forced to, obviously. But I don't want to.
You just don't want anyone else to watch Cats.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody has to watch Cats on this planet. Plus, what really fucked me up already as a child is Disney movies. And you might not
come on. The Lion King has great.
You
songs.
But I started to like it a bit more when I was old enough to watch the original versions. Because I'll tell you one thing, the songs in German are so fucking awful.
I didn't understand what you meant at first, but you only saw the dubbed.
Obviously.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, as a child, obviously you see the dubbed version.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And the only one that really was great, in my opinion, Lion King was great, obviously, but the songs are still so much better in English. The only one where they really made the effort to make great songs out of it in the dub version was Jungle Book.
Oh, really?
That one is really nice.
That's cool.
Like King Louis' song is amazing in German and in English.
That's awesome.
But there were so many. Do you know?
I think I did see Jungle Book in German because of the school job. King Louis' song is really cool. Who's the Baloo? The bear?
Baloo.
Probier's
mal mit Gemütlichkeit, mit Ruhe und Gemütlichkeit. That one was great, but I don't know if you know the Disney movie, I don't know the English title, something like Bear Brothers?
It's a movie.
Yeah. It's not that old.
I don't know, it's probably a different name.
Early 2000s.
Bear Brothers.
I gotta look it up.
No, I don't know that.
It was called Brother Bear.
No, I don't know that.
The problem with it. Phil Collins made the soundtrack. That's a problem on its own. But Phil Collins did not only do the songs in English. No, Phil Collins himself did the German versions of the songs.
Okay, that's bad.
And that one, it is a super sweet movie, you definitely gotta see it sometime. latest when you get kids. It is a great movie. It's about two like Native American brothers,
mm-hmm.
long time ago.
It's animated.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's still a drawn movie.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Animated.
So not computer animated.
Right.
From 2003. And one of them, I don't know, I just sum it up in my own words now. One of them is a bit older and is really, I don't know, is not treating animals right, etc.
Okay.
Obviously, they live in this great landscape, looks something like Alaska or something. And so the gods turn him into a bear. And he doesn't get along.
Okay.
And then his brother wishes to be a bear and wants to find him, etc. And it's amazing journey, okay. Amazing storytelling.
Okay.
Really sweet, partly really sad story, but
sure.
Great. But then there's Phil Collins. Phil fucking Collins.
Now wait a second. Before we put Phil Collins on the ringer here, did you ever see Tarzan? The cartoon Tarzan from Disney?
Tarzan?
Yeah.
How do you spell it?
Tarzan. Tarzan of the Jungle.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Phil Collins did that too, and that's amazing, man. Come on.
Yeah,
but I don't love Phil Collins. Yeah, but Tarzan was great. His music was great for that. I think he won like 11 Academy Awards or whatever.
Yeah, but still the German version sucks.
You know, actually, that's a cool... That's
things get worse when you try to translate them in German.
That's often. Fair. That's actually a topic that my friend Chris had been asking us to bring in, but I kept forgetting to write it down. But here's the perfect segue into that. He was saying, he's a German guy, and he was like, you know, what's really interesting to him is how all these famous artists back in the day, like Bowie and the Beatles and apparently Phil Collins, would sing their own popular songs with their own voices in German. So you have like the Beatles, like for people who don't know this, because I actually did not know this, is the Beatles would actually sing their greatest like early 60s pop hits.
Have you ever listened to it?
In German.
There's already like an EP.
It's crazy, man.
It's super crazy.
Like, She Loves You, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, Sie liebt dich, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's crazy, man. It's crazy to hear that. And David Bowie, he sang Heroes in German. That's crazy to hear that.
That's actually quite new, and it's super bad because they did that for an Nike advertisement.
Oh, that wasn't the old, he didn't do that back in the day.
He already did that back in the day, but they did kind of a new version of it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
With... Obviously, it's a cover version then, because when did David Bowie die? A few years ago?
Yeah, he died at least maybe 10 or 9
something
years
about
ago.
2011, 12, yeah.
Something like that. But this like artist singing in German, I think that is kind of an interesting...
Oh, 2016.
Thing. 2016?
Damn, it feels like...
Oh, you know what? Because I had this memory in my head of being in my friend Ben's house in New Orleans in like 2011, and that was when Bowie released his last album. We were talking about it because I was like how is that record, and he was like, yeah, it's okay, it's not his best. And then so later he died. Okay. But do you, I mean, why did they do that? Because I mean, there's so much native English music that is popular already.
Yeah,
since forever in Germany, at least forever since they let it in. But I think it's crazy that they just actually sang the other lyrics, and they don't really do that anymore. You don't hear Bieber being like, you know, like,
yeah,
and Judy Gong, and Judy Gong. You know, you don't hear that anywhere. You don't hear it. So why did they do it then, and why did it change?
Or imagine Tame Impala. Es fühlt sich an, als ob wir rückwärts gehen. Immer nur rückwärts gehen.
I don't even know which song that is. Which one is that one?
It feels like we only go
back. Oh, rückwärts. Oh, yeah. Of course. Man, that's crazy. Yeah, imagine if they still did that today. I mean, imagine if I had a song. Let's say, for example.
Bist du meins? Bist du meins?
Yeah. Imagine if I had a song like The Crooked Rail or something, and imagine it got to that sort of level. Yeah. That back in the day, I would have to sing it in German, maybe Italian. I don't know. Did they only sing in German, or did they sing in other languages too?
I mean, with Bowie and the Beatles, it's obviously because they had these connections. The Beatles had their time in Hamburg for, like, you know that they've
yeah, been of course. Of
Bowie course. Lived in Berlin, so obviously there's that connection.
Did Queen do anything in German? And they, because I know Freddie lived in Munich a long time.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I know about Queen, but yeah. Plus,
was there any? There must be history to that.
I've read something about this. With some artists, I guess. Yeah, mostly in the 70s and 80s, there has been kind of a marketing gag of the music industry to, I don't know, to sell an artist's music to people or to populations that speak another language, to kind of make the to make them feel more connected with their favorite artist or whatever.
Right.
Plus, you must not forget that back then, I mean, like, so many more people worldwide speak and understand English today than, I don't know, in the, especially in countries like Germany.
Of course, yeah. And this, like, was like
the generation or two generations before me.
Right.
You didn't really learn English in school or something.
Of course. Yeah, yeah, of course, of course.
And so I think...
But do you think because they sang Ich liebe dich, ja, 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 that was a much more popular song here than I love you, yeah, yeah, yeah?
No, totally not. Totally.
Was it like a gag? Was it them being like, we're going to sell like 10 more records or whatever, or 10 million because it's the Beatles?
I don't know the story behind the Beatles record, but I think it was more like a... I imagine it, or... I'm not sure about this. I've read something about this, maybe in the amazing John Lennon biography I've read, but could also be wrong, and I mix this up with some other artist. But I pictured, like, they lived in Germany for, or in Hamburg. Hamburg is in Germany, obviously. They lived in Hamburg for like 4 years, 2 years, 4 years, whatever. Obviously, they played night in, night out shows there.
Yeah.
And I imagined, like, being a gag on stage. Like, okay, let's play.
Guys, how do you say this? How do you say I love you?
Okay, and then let's play the chorus again in German, whatever.
Yeah.
And maybe out of that gag, some guy with the record studio came up and said, hey, don't you want to record this?
Let's track it down, guys. Fun. You'll sell
that's
more
what
records.
I think it was. Yeah. But
it makes sense.
I totally don't get to get back to Disney movies.
Mm.
I totally don't get why they... why one would think, so the thing is, I know that I am a part of a minority that really hates those German versions of these songs.
There's bound to be people who hate the dub.
There
yeah.
are so
Ify
many people
dubbed. She thoroughly hates
who love the dubbed songs.
Well, when you grow up with it too, that's part of it. Like, yeah. I think you.
I already hated this as a child.
Yeah, you hate musicals because you were scarred by this group you had to do. So you always will kind of hate musicals a little bit, unless you're just thoroughly convinced.
Yeah.
And I think when some people grow up with this, even if it's like kind of a shittier version of something, if they grow up with it, they're like, oh, but I had that as a kid. Yeah. You know, you're
plus,
bound to
I
like it.
I don't quite get why they made the effort. Like, okay, they must have thought something like, okay, obviously this is a kid's movie. German kids usually don't grow up bilingual. There's got to be a German dubbed version.
Right.
And so they might think, okay, let's also do the songs because it's for kids. But then I think, okay, even kids in Germany are exposed to radio, where I would say, like, in Germany, at least 70%, 60, 70%, something of that, of the music that's played on the radio.
Right.
Which you're exposed to as a child. In your parents' car,
right.
In your parents' kitchen, whatever.
Is English.
Is English.
Right. So why not keep the original?
Why not keep these songs in the original and maybe put subtitles or whatever?
Right, right. But then I think about, there's also this idea that if you read into what a lot of children's television and film writers, and if you look into like Pixar's history and Disney's history, like, what they want to do, the goal is for them to make movies that, of course, the kids will love. They're going to get absorbed in. They're going to buy the merchandise, of course, like Toy Story and Monsters, Inc. and stuff. But they also want to have like intelligent enough stories that are interesting and gripping for mom and dad to be able to rewatch over and over and over.
Yeah.
Like if my future kid loves, for example, let's say like Finding Nemo, that's cool for me. I like Finding Nemo. I don't love it so much that I'm going to, you know, buy a Nemo pillow and go to sleep with it every night. But if my kid did, I'd be like, that's cool. It's a good movie. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to like cry over it. And I think they probably just thought, okay, it's going to be easier if we dub everything because some of the older parents, hey, let's say this is like 1991 or whatever. You know, Lion King was 94. Yeah. So let's do everything in German, of course, because you're going to have some older parents who don't speak any English.
Yeah.
The kids are going to attach to it very quickly. And then the parents can rewatch it because it's a good story and they're not going to be held up by reading subtitles or from kids' movies. It just makes sense.
From a marketing's perspective, I also see because I see it with, I don't know, with my little siblings, because the German versions of the songs and they're, even the lyrics there are kept more simple than in the English versions.
Mm-hmm.
So that a 3-year old, a 5-year old, whatever, sings along. I don't know.
Right.
And for those little kids, when they're allowed to watch a Disney movie the first time or whatever, this is a huge experience. So I remember being with my little brother when he was 4. No, he was 5 already.
Mm-hmm.
And it was his first time at the cinema. And we were watching. What was it? There was some Pixar movie about a snail that ended up being a race car or something like that.
I'm in. I'm hooked.
Turbo or something. That was the name. Turbo Little Snail or whatever. And it was a huge experience.
Right.
And there he was totally flashed by it, etc. And there were no songs in it, but I also, I don't know, my little baby sister.
Right.
She's seen the Ice Princess. What's that?
Frozen.
Called? Frozen. That's the name.
Elsa.
obviously, she's seen that one. And after that,
everyone
for weeks, she's been singing, I don't know.
Let it go.
Yeah, all of these songs.
Sure. Of course. You know my...
Lass es gehen!
Oh, God.
No!
Even my little niece, you know, she's in love with Frozen and she's always either trying to watch it or she has like a little Elsa dress, so she wears it all the time.
Yeah.
And I think like, of course, I don't love every song in Frozen, but I think the story is good. It's one of those things again where it's like, okay, they want to watch Frozen for the 11th time. At least there's something there with like Olaf and like there's some humor there. There's enough to make it interesting for the adults to, you know.
I still like it because it's still an original movie. Because what I really hate about, I don't know, what Disney does these days is just producing new versions of the stories, because that's the next marketing level. Like
repeating stories.
You've been a child in the 90s. You loved Lion King. Bam! Here's a new version.
Oh, I see.
But we got 3D animation and whatever. But still, there are new songs and whatever.
Right.
So your kid can watch this, and you will also watch it. Even
like
the
live action,
dude. Yeah. With my girlfriend, I've been to Lion King plus Aladdin.
Right.
And obviously, we don't have a kid.
Right.
But
she's
like, yeah, but I loved that movie as a child.
Sure. Same. We saw both in theaters too.
By the way,
Jungle Book was the first one they redid.
I didn't see that because I really was protesting that because I was like, no, this is such an amazing movie and I don't want to ruin my image of it.
That's
what's
fair.
Your favorite Disney movie of all time?
Oh man. Well, I'd say like, it's not easy to answer that because of how much it's changed in the last 30 years.
First thing that comes to your mind. Without
first,
thinking.
First one that came to mind when you asked that, because of what I watched the most as a kid, if we're just talking about Disney animations, was Aladdin.
Yeah.
You say Aladdin. Yeah. Aladdin. That was the first one where I was like, man, I love Aladdin. I was in love with Jasmine. I thought she was a really cool, progressive princess.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't have to wear a big dress and like just be like looking for a man. She was looking for independence. And Robin Williams was my hero. I loved him as the genie. And
Robin Williams was a genie in the original version?
Famously. Yeah, dude.
Dude, I didn't know that.
Oh, man. Robin Williams.
Because I've only seen the dub version as a child. Wait, you still, see the problem.
Wait, but you've still not seen the original?
No.
Dude.
Because I've...
Dude! It's so good.
Because I have not rewatched every single movie I liked as a child.
Man, I've got to add this to your like laundry list of movies to watch.
Yeah, you already...
Man. Yeah, the original Aladdin is so... Great. I mean, of course, you know the songs already, but when you hear like the genie, when you hear like just the humor out of Robin Williams' voice, it's so natural. It's so
great. Yeah, and then it's 2018, and like, okay, Robin Williams is dead. Best we can do is, Will Smith.
Oh, man. And you know, what's funny too is I saw the remake of Aladdin, and I went in with pretty low expectations. In the first, I don't know, the first 15 minutes before we meet the genie, I was pretty disappointed. Even though I had came in with low standards, I was like, okay, if you know, the songs are good, but they're a bit too, it's all good. They're a bit too like auto-tuned, like a bit too perfect.
Yeah.
The same issue they had with Beauty and the Beast. It was too like, oh, like perfect auto-tuning weird. But the dancing was, you know, impressive and it was all impressive and stuff, but it just wasn't like gripping. But then when Will Smith showed up, I was like, well, here it comes. Now it's really going to just, now it's just going to go downhill. I'm not going to be able to watch that. I'm going to have to leave, you know? And it ended up that he became the most interesting part of the movie. And I ended up liking him a lot because the rest of the movie was so bad.
Yeah.
You know? Because Will Smith hadn't done anything great, I mean, since maybe I Am Legend. I mean, he was on a roll for a long time. You know, he had... of course, the Men in Black trilogy, I Am Legend, I, Robot.
Yeah.
And then he just kind of, it's a lot of bad movies. Yeah, he became like very nepotistic about his children and
There was
Scientology and it's weird.
There was one that was quite okay. I don't remember the whole plot, but it was something about him having a tree in his garden and every time a leaf falls off, he loses a year of his life or something.
Wait,
like
was
that.
This like, oh, well, he did, oh, Pursuit of Happiness was also good, and 7 Pounds.
I don't remember the name of that movie, but that was quite okay. But so the original Aladdin, which is a great movie, is your favorite Disney movie of all time. Okay, that's
like
a fair choice.
Yeah, like gun to my head, it was like, okay, that was the one I watched the most, but except for maybe The Lion King. I really liked that too as a kid.
Okay.
Yeah. What about you?
Robin Hood.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one.
I don't know. When it comes to this movie, I really like the old ones because I also feel like...
Who was that guy?
Regarding that I've seen the dub versions, like I also mentioned with Jungle Book, which is one of the oldest, if not... I don't know.
I'm listening.
That I think, or for me, it feels like they really put more work into dubbing it.
Into the Robin Hood. Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just this
play,
music.
Play the song, yeah.
Robin Hood and Little John walking through the forest, laughing back and forth at what the other has to say. Reminiscing this and that and having such a good time.
What a day.
Oh man, it's that's so great.
That's so that's like I forgot this guy's name. Oodalali. I used to have an album. Oodalali. I literally had to type it in like that. What is his name? Oh, that's going to kill me. Roger Miller. Man. Yeah. I used to have an album of his songs, and they're all nice. Like this. They're a lot of them, of course, are from Robin Hood, and he has a few others, but they're just this like beautiful, simple, folky country picking, and this crisp, like rich voice and like simple lyrics.
And the sound effects. They had back then, like just as the little splash we heard.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, that one was so great. Also because when I rewatched it when I was older, and you started to think about it, which obviously doesn't work with a lot of other Disney movies that that work with animals.
Right.
It's like this transferring. Okay. Which, and if you know the original Robin Hood story, which animal impersonates which character in Robin Hood?
Oh,
like Robin Hood being a fox,
That actually makes a lot of sense, yeah. Did you like Robin Hood Men in Tights? Did you see that movie? The Mel Brooks movie? You would know
which
it.
Which one was that?
It's the
because they're
live action comedy with Cary Elwes, and I think Dave Chappelle was even in it. It was from like the early 90s or late 80s.
I'm not sure about that. Okay. I don't think so.
Okay.
Add it to the list.
Add it to the list. It's going to be one of those like big Rolodex, like,
yeah. That's something we could do for Instagram.
Oh,
create
my God,
a big
man.
List of movies I got to see.
Dude, the comment list would just go on and on and on and on and on. But just to change the pace slightly.
Yeah.
I have a lot of news, man.
Yes. And to close this, because we started with my podcast and Oberstdorf and ski jumping, etc.
Oh, my God. Right. That was like 40 minutes ago, man. Yeah. Thing. Sorry.
Like 40 minutes ago.
Okay. So you go ahead. Finish that. Sorry.
Yeah. Just to close that, because I don't like starting so many stories without closing it. You started with video we posted with the podcast, and we talked about my coworker who does it with that, and it's about the different perspectives. So you have on the one hand Vincent, mm-hmm. this Olympic champion, this active athlete. You've her, who has been a junior athlete, who
Corinna was a junior athlete.
Corinna, yeah,
that's cool.
A biathlete, so like running and shooting.
Ah, okay. For a biathlete in English would sound like she likes boys and girls. Like she has like dual skills or whatever.
Yeah. And she gave up so much in her youth. And that's also what the latest episode is about. She gave up so much in her youth and sacrificed so much for her dream to become a pro.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, with 19... And she moved away from her hometown with 14 years old and had to move in with her coach, which was kind of weird, etc.
That's weird.
And stuff like that. Because she doesn't come from a place where you can do winter sports.
I see.
Much
like Eddie the Eagle.
And basically, this might sound too harsh, but she failed. She just was not good enough to make it to the World Cup, etc. And we talked about how harsh it can be for kids who sacrifice so much at a very young age,
yeah.
with like, I don't know, in their early teens, and then just to realize when they're adults, okay, this did not lead to where I expected it to lead to.
Yeah.
And so we have her perspective being, after her A-levels, she was a pro for 1 year, then she quit because she realized she just will not make it. Just she's an ex-athlete who has lived through much. He's an active athlete who has achieved quite a lot and is still going strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a sports journalist, and those are the three perspectives on it.
That's very cool. How many episodes do you guys have right now?
Today we released the third episode.
Number three.
And
okay.
Every Tuesday there'll be a new one.
That's cool. If you're a German speaker and you're into winter sports, listen to Ski Happens, She Happens.
Yeah.
That's a
just
great,
to,
great
to,
name.
To close that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because I already heard a little bit about you in great news.
I've only heard a little about.
Do you want to share it?
So I can go ahead. I can go ahead and say, because I don't know all the specific terms about it yet, but starting in late January or early February, if you follow me or this show, of course, we're going to advertise everything when when everything's confirmed. But basically, around the end of January or early February, I'm going to have my own radio show on Ego FM.
Who needs a soundboard for a podcast?
It's going to be, so basically I was looking for some work, and my friend Sandra is a fantastic journalist over at Ego FM, and she...
We mentioned her before, I guess.
Yeah, she's...
Just won the...
This huge
prize. The German Radio Award.
Yeah, that's right.
For her show, Chelsea Hotel.
That's right. Didn't she just interview Marika Hackman?
Could be.
She just talked to Marika.
She interviews a lot of great people. And
yeah, Future Islands, like everybody. She's amazing, and her and I have been friends for a while, and I wrote her, like, I had also wrote you about maybe anything at M94.5, So I wrote her as well and said, you know, I have experience for a year now or so with the podcast, of course, recording myself at home with other things, with music projects, and just said, hey, do you know anything going on at the station that would work? And she said, well, I don't know much of anything, but I can help you build a nice, like build up your CV. So she helped me build it up like for radio, like putting things in a certain direction. Yeah. And then she sent it in. And then this lovely guy, Fred, who is one of the bosses over there, hit me up and said, hey, I heard your music. I heard this show, Artsy Fartsy. He likes it.
Nice.
And he said he wanted to.
That's super nice to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. He's
like, we're still just such a little show.
Yeah.
Just doing it for the sake of our own mental health.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like a chance for us to hang and for our moms to know that we're alive.
To get positive feedback from such a big radio personality.
That's awesome.
It's great. Thank you a lot if you're listening again.
Yeah, absolutely. And basically, Fred contacted me and said, I liked everything, and I know that you're looking for some work. So I have this Sunday slot coming up later in 2021 where I would need a 3-hour show from 10 to 1.
Yeah.
You would do like these certain styles of music, but I need someone who wants to tell stories, and I'm looking for native English, which was really lucky for me.
Yeah.
And he said, make me a test hour. So I said, okay. And last week I was visiting my parents-in-law, and yeah, I brought all my equipment with me, and I sat down one day and they sent me this file of all the music they wanted me to choose from. They said, you know, you don't have to use this, but this is something to go off of.
Yeah.
They sent me maybe like 40 songs, and they said, make us an hour. So I looked at their timeline. They sent me this sheet that basically broke down how things should flow and break and stuff. And I followed it the best that I could, but I told them up front that I just basically made the show that I'd want to hear and tried to follow it, but wasn't killing myself over it because it's just a test.
Yeah.
And I made a show with just the way that I would imagine you'd hear it on the radio. I talked as if I already have the show. I introduced it as, you know, this is your American Sunday special here on Ego FM. I'm your host, Jordan Prince. And I told some stories about New Orleans. I referenced this idea that like the show is in an American diner on like the Nevada interstate somewhere. And
nice.
On Route 66, you pull over, there's the jukebox, you got your fried eggs, your bacon.
You did play all your cliches again.
Of course, I did it. I did it because that's like, I think there isn't this kind of radio show in Munich, you know? Yeah. I mean, at least not in Munich. And yeah, so I did the show in a comfortable way for me. I tried to be like in some moments kind of earnest, in some moments kind of funny, a bit like this show, and put the music in a certain order that I think worked really nice. And then I sent it off to him, and he listened, and the next day he wrote me and said he loved it.
Nice.
He said he loved how I talked about the music, how I talked about my personal stories with friends and family and stuff, and wants me, well, basically says, I want you to do the show, but I'm going to do a second, I would say less of a test hour, but just a second show, because he's going to send me like these terms, like the jingles, the openers,
yeah,
like all this radio
all
sounds.
These elements.
Elements, exactly, yeah. So his producer's going to send me those. I'm
in German radio language, you call it Verpackung.
The Verpackung.
Sendungsverpackung.
Yeah, he's going to send me the Sendungsverpackung.
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 It would also be a great name for the show. Welcome back to the Sendungsverpackung.
The Sendungstobacco. And I'll just make another one for him. And then, yeah. So, I of course, I'm trying to find more work in general right now. But I'd say that's a great place to start, man.
Dude.
I'm really happy about that. I'm really excited to do that. I think that's like, in addition, you know, because it's great exposure also for this show and for my own music. But more than that, it's a chance to actually make a living in something that I really enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And that's the best thing I could ever ask for.
That's also what I felt when you told me those news, because I also thought a little about it. And yeah, this could be great. And I think as far as I can say from me also working in radio, you did quite an amazing job here hosting this show.
Thanks, man.
And obviously, because I think we would not do this anymore if you would not really love this.
If it didn't work or something.
Plus, I think this could be a real win-win situation for you and the station, for you as a musician to promote yourself and the stuff you do, etc. And also for the station to have this very special show, mm-hmm. and a show in English is something very special, especially since it's
very
not
progressive.
It's not like a pretty niche station. Right. Obviously, they're a bit niche regarding the music, mm-hmm. Comparing it to a lot of other private radio stations. That's a big point.
Right.
So it's everything they do is always kind of a financial risk.
Right, right.
And so that's a big step. Plus, it's not only Air Munich. It's like, I don't know, they have like 5 or 6 cities in southern Germany. I don't know it. But like Munich, Stuttgart, Nuremberg, whatever. Yeah, and it could also be great for them because something I think German radio has lost since, I don't know, maybe 20 years or something, is great music radio, like back to the roots.
Right.
So imagine back then having a DJ that is able to tell you a nice story and is able to tell you the next song he's going to play
right.
is the best you're going to hear today.
Right.
And really makes you enjoy music.
Yeah, that's definitely something I want to do.
Especially German private radio has come to, in Germany you call it Formatradio, has developed into something, okay, a lot of snackable content. And do you know the feeling when you wake up and it's Christmas and your neighbors, I don't know, just call us. What's the sound effect of the day? Just call us, blah, 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 win something here, win something there.
Mm-hmm.
Like this. This service orientated radio,
right,
and hosting style of hosting, and not but too, what to call it, too smooth already, you know, like,
right,
not,
it doesn't have not, as much like you don't really feel the person behind the show,
yeah,
as
exactly
much.
And hosts play these roles and everything sounds like the same, and they're trying not to hurt anybody with anything and always try to find topic that could, like, it's about, like, snackable and relatable content, like, hey, mm-hmm. you know the feeling when you wake up and work is shitty, but we'll bring you to the day and to your fire and beer, whatever. And always this kind of thing. And I think there are a lot of people missing this more, like, you could say old-fashioned style of, yeah, music radio. Do you know this pretty famous German radio, or you probably would know him as a TV host, Thomas Gottschalk?
No, I don't know.
He's a big personality.
Like maybe I know his face.
He's around 70. He has this really long, curly, blonde hair. I think you've seen his face before.
Maybe.
And he started the Bayerischer Rundfunk in the 70s, I guess. And it's exactly what he did back then. Like, he was choosing vinyls back then.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Playing music and played music he had a passion about and wanted to share that. And that was the style of radio he did. And I think you could more legitimately bring that back, because I think there are still so many people, and it's also kind of the USP of Ego FM, like, what's their claim? Radio für Musikentdecker or something like that. Like,
something
radio
like that.
For people who like to explore new music. And you could more legitimately bring back that type of radio if you have a musician doing the show.
I think that's also like, something they look for. Yeah.
Yeah, I am a musician. I have certain insights in, I don't know, songwriting, in recording,
right,
in performing. And here's what I like, and here's what, from my kind of expertise, I can say about this.
Right.
And this is why this song is awesome.
Right.
Go enjoy it. And maybe listen very closely. You might hear a little special, I don't know, bridge or something in this song or whatever.
Right.
Like this type of, right, like really making people understand and enjoy music, mm-hmm. and not just playing what, I don't know, the big labels flood you into your station. Okay, here's the top 40 hit. We have,
yeah.
You got to do this rotation. So like the new Dua Lipa single has to play like between 5 and 7 for the next 3 weeks. It has to play like 3 times or whatever.
Right.
No, yeah, just business. Choose the music and make people enjoy it. And
exactly.
I think
and just enjoying radio again.
You could really do.
I hope so. I mean, he basically gave me a good bit of freedom. He said he has a pretty specific ear for the kind of music that he wants played, and I will have to work with his...
But do you like that style of music?
I think there's a lot of great opportunity in the stuff he wants to hear. He didn't say... none of the genres he listed were things I didn't think immediately of great bands. The cool thing is, part of it is I'm like compromising or collaborating with the music redaction team there. They're going to be, of course, researching the majority of the stuff he wants.
Yeah.
But he is giving me what I'm going to call the jukebox block, which is between like 5 and 8 songs or whatever that I want.
This is awesome.
Which is amazing because I can choose it because I want to hear it because I'm passionate about it and I can talk about it.
Nice.
So it's going to be 7 Jordan Prince songs and 1 Big Lemois song.
excuse me, Mr. Head of Ego. Could we make it like 12 songs? Because I have 12 friends in mind, I would...
I have 12 friends who listen to the show. And
I got 12 songs from them.
It's pretty convenient. Maybe I could change
and
it.
I also got this great album, you might have heard of it, 12 Songs for 12 Friends. So, yeah, basically, I would play that album.
I think it would be pretty cool. But yeah, man, I'm really excited about it. Nice. It should, do one more test hour, and then it should start late January, nice. Early February.
But in general, I think we could say this is really a big does include a lot of music, but the style of music Ego FM plays does match what you would
totally
like to hear on the radio.
Totally, yeah, for sure. They have most of the time they're playing something that I dig anyway. But of course, there is a handful of time that they play whatever or whatever they want to play.
Yeah.
But I'm very thankful for that. And I'm thankful to Sandra as well. I don't know if she's listening, but I'm very thankful to Sandra. She's been this sort of beacon of hope and positivity and support in the last month or so. And that means a lot, man. That's really great.
This is all so awesome.
Yeah. Let's take a little pee break. And then I have another cool story I want to tell.
Ooh, nice.
Guess who's back again.
Fart's back.
Tell
fart
some men.
Fart a friend. Dude, I don't want you to get jealous because I'm not cheating on this podcast.
Okay.
But I have been asked to be a guest on another podcast episode.
Yeah.
For the first time ever.
That is amazing.
That's the first time, and that's really cool. There is this guy named Thomas. He lives in Western Massachusetts, and he wrote me because, like, it was so random. He found the new single, I Wish I Hadn't Got Stoned, on this SoundCloud playlist, which is funny to me because I always wait a week after Spotify and iTunes before I release the singles on SoundCloud because maybe I'll have, like, I don't know, a handful of streams on SoundCloud.
Yeah.
And as opposed to like whatever numbers are doing on Spotify.
And you use SoundCloud more like to upload songs privately to show it to labels.
Exactly.
That's how you use SoundCloud.
Exactly. And occasionally there's one SoundCloud playlister who's not even so popular, but he's just a really nice guy and he writes really nice reviews.
Okay.
And I met him like, I don't know, 7 years ago.
Nice in terms of he's nice to the people he writes about or he writes good reviews?
Both. 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 He writes like really poetic, beautiful. If he likes the music, he writes these poetic, deep, meaningful, interesting reviews that I have, like stuff that I really, really remember thinking like, wow, that's quite the review. But, you know, he's you know, I don't know, got a few hundred followers on there. It's nothing like a big channel.
Yeah.
And, I had written to him about the new singles and he had, you know, reposted them and stuff. Sometimes he writes a nice review and then I'll put them on my website. And that's what I do it for, so I can have the nice review because it's nice
that he
does that. Yeah, it's cool. And so a week after Stoned released, we were talking and he was like, oh, you know, if you release Stoned on SoundCloud, I'm going to repost it and I can make a review for it. I said, yeah, that sounds great. So he reposted it on his page and I don't know, it has, I don't know, like 10 or 12 streams on there, whatever. And this guy, Thomas, wrote me an email and he was like, hey, man, I came across your song on this guy's playlist of all places. he said he had released music from his band or his project in the past, maybe a couple years ago or a year ago. And the same thing happened where the guy reposted it and he gets updates from that playlist. And I was like, yeah. Oh, that's great. He said his band is called Niagara Moon, which is funny because we just off air just talked about my friend's band Moon Mates
and then
Moon Band, who's another friend of mine band. Niagara Moon, I guess, yeah, they're a Massachusetts band, or maybe it's, I think I checked out his Instagram. I think it might be a solo project that he does with friends, but he has a podcast with the same name, Niagara Moon Podcast.
Okay.
Where they have a guest on and they talk about, from like beginning to end, they talk about an album that they love from some other artist.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so funny, dude. He nailed me down perfectly. He was like, here's what my podcast is. I'd love to have you on the show. And I would guess maybe you want to talk about a Mac DeMarco album. And he's like, you know, I know you live in Germany. We can make the time difference work, but we'd love to have you as a guest on the show. And I was like, man, that would be great to like be a guest on a podcast. I've never been in that position before.
That is amazing.
That's really cool. So I wrote him back and I said,
by the way, yeah, that's definitely not cheating on me. I would also always,
I was just joking.
I would always embrace that if there are these opportunities.
I sure know. Thing. I know you would. I was just kidding. And I wrote him back and I said, yeah, that sounds great. And I was like, you pegged me perfectly. I'd love to talk about Salad Days from head to tail. Salad Days nice. Is like my favorite, one of my favorite records of all time. And then he wrote back and he said, yeah, that sounds great. That's a good pick. We haven't covered that yet. That's a good one to talk about. And we landed the date. So we're going to record on December 12th.
Nice.
I think I'm going to record in the evening. And with him, and then I think it should come out around December 16th on the Niagara, Niagara Moon, Niagara Moon podcast. So you can hear me as a guest on someone else's show.
That's super cool.
Pretty excited about that, yeah.
But talking curious. About your single,
yeah.
Being already 1 more week beyond, how do you feel about it? How the numbers, if you want to talk about that?
Do you
feel comfortable about that?
Yeah, everything looks pretty good. I mean, basically, so we're recording this on Tuesday. You guys hear this on Thursday. So Friday is the last day that it's going to be. I mean, who knows? Maybe cross your fingers. It stays on this playlist another week, but normally that never happens. But as I've talked about on the last episode, the song got picked up for a second week by some miracle on this huge Spotify playlist.
Indie brand new.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it's on Friday, it's the end of that second week, and probably it's going to be taken off. But because of that playlist, the numbers are great.
Yeah.
It's like for me to be unknown, to have done almost no marketing for it.
But just good. For me, as someone who has never released music, and for our listeners,
mm-hmm.
Do you want to name a number or?
Oh yeah, sure. Of course.
Just to have an impression.
I mean, what I can do is basically, I mean, so you guys have to know.
Like, I don't know, total streams or whatever.
Right.
Just would be interesting.
So I'll pull up my Spotify for artists right now and I can look at, let's say all time streams for, let's see where this
is. By the way, I really loved the animation for Spotify.
Oh, the canvas, the loop. It's cool, right?
I don't use Spotify, so I cannot really enjoy it, but I saw it on Instagram, and it's super cool.
Oh, man, you should really get on that. Okay, so for example, my peak most streamed song...
Of all time
is this... acoustic version of Parade I did with Tim Hecking.
We talked about that on the show because it got picked up by some playlists who played in cafes.
Coffeehouse Musik.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was a
German coffeehouse playlist.
Yeah.
So that was picked up crazily, like completely by random.
Okay.
To some playlist, and that did really well. And that's still sitting at the top at 123,000.
So total.
That, total. And that's, okay. And that's really cool for someone like me who's never really had that much money for marketing.
Yeah, sure.
Kind of an unknown guy.
And you
guy.
Didn't have a label at the time, you said, Ra.
Didn't have a label then at all. Just under that is Fresh Ground from the same EP with Tim Hecking with 103,000. And that crossed 100,000 like a month ago.
Okay.
Because of this La Vagabonde music. It's Australian. La Vagabonde music playlist. It's these Australian guys who make YouTube travel videos, this couple.
Yeah.
And they asked me if they could have like the free licensing to use it for the video. They're mm-hmm. going to put it into their playlist. Their playlist has like tens of thousands of listeners.
Okay.
So this is organic, like 103 just over time slowly growing.
Yeah.
And that's really, really, really cool. So with that in mind, those two being like somewhere between 100 and 130,000 being the most
And they had quite some time for that. I mean, like this EP was released in 2015, 16?
That's a good note. Yeah. This EP is from 2015.
15, yeah.
So that's 5 years and they're just over 100,000. So let's look at the new singles. So Crooked Rail's been out since May.
Yeah.
And it's at 62,000 already.
That is amazing.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Which is great. It's maybe in a few months, maybe by like February, it could also be at 100, who knows? But for May, so it's May 29th.
But this
so
is only Spotify.
June, July, August, September, October. So 5 months, 6 months, it's at half, over halfway of what my most streamed song is.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
But wait a second, this is mm-hmm. only Spotify numbers.
This is only
so
Spotify
me being,
numbers.
Being an Apple Music addict of your music isn't represented there.
It's not represented here.
Okay,
that's actually a good point.
Most of the people use Spotify, but there are still a lot of people who use other streaming platforms.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah. So I don't even know what the Apple numbers are, or Deezer or Pandora. I don't even know. And for I Wish I Hadn't Got Stoned. Let's see. So all time streamed since November 13th, so almost 2 full weeks, right? No, almost 3 full weeks.
Almost 3 full weeks, yeah.
Is 8.7 thousand streams, which is really cool. So in 3 weeks... 8.7 thousand streams.
Okay, yeah.
So 8,700 something.
Okay.
Which is really cool because I really didn't put much marketing in this at all. Like we just released the video and the single at the right time. Spotify put it into this playlist, and that's faster than Crooked Rail did.
That's crazy.
For the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's really good. That's really, really good. Now we have this cool like design on there, and I think it's, yeah. I mean, I don't know what to expect.
Yeah, and
after
you still gotta bring to the account that you did not have the chance to promote your music live this year. And still,
no concerts, yeah.
And still, because... For a smaller artist like you,
right,
that is one of the biggest pushes.
Might be
I
the
would
most
say.
Important, yeah. In a way.
The most important, yeah. And you didn't have this that year.
I think maybe what so maybe still, what helped like maybe what helped with Crooked Rail and with Stoned was that on top of my normal marketing techniques that I do, and now additionally with some stuff that the label suggested that we do, this was also the first year that I ever started using TikTok.
Yeah.
And making videos that are just like kind of funny and stuff. And I don't even necessarily mean stuff on the platform.
I showed you the version.
With your sister.
Yeah.
That was great, man. I felt so honored. I felt so honored that she did that. That was so funny.
Yeah, because my older little sister was like, hey, I got to show you this. Our baby sister is so fascinated by this because she knows one word in this TikTok.
Duh. Duh.
But for you. Mm-hmm. Seeing those numbers, especially for your new singles, what does that mean for you, or what do you get out of this in terms of how do you, I don't know, how do you kind of value this? Does this show you, okay, working with this labeler pays off, or are there other factors that you think about that, or how do you deal with those numbers?
I have a feeling that the numbers for Stoned in particular might not have too much to do with the label at all.
Okay.
I think this song fits the particular zeitgeist of... Oh, that's a nice German word.
Zeitgeist.
I think it fits this particular zeitgeist of like, look, the last year especially has been very tough.
Yeah.
It's like in the ear, the song matches this kind of like indie, compressed, catchy pop sound that is kind of hitting right now. And then also the context and the lyrics and the point of the song is very silly and funny and loose and like has no repercussions at all.
Yeah.
So I think the song is just kind of flowing in this perfect way where it's like, look, it's a great like rocky poppy track. It's catchy. It's dirty. It's, you know, you can tell this would be fun live, but also it's just loose and
it
silly.
Already has been fun live.
Yeah. Well, no one remembers those days. That was years ago.
Yeah.
But I think, like, for new listeners, I mean, I think they can hear the song, they can vibe with it. This was the song that, like, a lot of people wrote me on Instagram. Friends wrote me, like, people that I admire, musicians I admire a lot from New Orleans, wrote me that this one just stayed in their head. They kept listening to it. And I hadn't really had that in a while. Like, I had that with maybe...
And I hadn't really got stoned in a while.
And I hadn't really got stoned in a while. But I don't know. It just felt like this is the right moment for this, like, little catchy, punchy, silly, funny, goofy song. You know? And I think that's why it's doing... Like, I think 8,000 in right now is, like, 2.5 weeks.
You felt the momentum there.
Yeah, I think it's just fitting this moment of, like, look, we just want to relax and just enjoy something funny.
Yeah.
And then, you know, who knows? I want to also mention the next single in February, but I think this just fits the moment right now. And I think Crooked Rail was also like this. I think it also did well in May because I think there's two things. Crooked Rail has also done very well, but it did well at a slower pace than this one.
Yeah.
Crooked Rail was maybe like after 2.5 weeks, maybe like 5,000. And then it slowly, gradually just kept getting on different people's playlists.
Yeah.
Like different, like, individual users' playlists and building up, like, for their 2020 playlist or whatever. And it was just, you know, it's a song about pretending to be happy. And this is when, like, Zoom was blowing up. People were doing these conferences and online meetings.
That's what,
like,
I wanted to mention because I really admire you and also especially the people who worked on with you on this, especially on the videos.
Mm.
Also with the Crooked Rail, like fitting the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
Back then, the idea of, okay, now since a month or two, maybe it was roughly about a month, people are stuck at home, people are getting used, even people who did not do this before are getting used to doing video calls, conferences, whatever.
Right.
Let's make art out of this. Let's create a video of this form of communication, and that was awesome.
I love that idea too. I really do. And
the video is still awesome if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
But I wonder if there are people who like you and us enough to still be here and listen to this have not seen the video. But if it happens that you have not seen the video for the Crooked Rail single from May, go watch it.
Awesome. Or if you have a friend who might like it.
Yeah, sure.
You know, if they've ever complained about, like, oh, I have another Zoom call tomorrow and I'm rolling out of bed. I just have to put my makeup on immediately and I just don't feel like doing it. And like, I'm so tired and stuff. It just fits that whole, you know, that whole feeling. And this one is just, you know, we just got a different president and Corona's crazy. And it's just, hey, this is just a silly, goofy song. Just have a good laugh because you haven't had one in a few months, you know? But then, like, on top of that, in February, around the time that I'm going to have this new Ego show, will be the third single. Because, like I told you before, everything has been pushed back.
Perfect timing, by the way.
Which is cool timing. I can play it on my own show. Nepotism. There's nihilism is thinking nothing matters, and then there's...
Are you still forgetting English words?
All the time. It's crazy. It's crazy. But anyway, so the third single is this song called Smiling Back at Me, and...
Is this the title now?
Well, it's...
Because
it's
always, I just know it as Smiling.
It's a bit like when you just say stoned.
Okay, but the full title is Smiling Back at Me.
And then parentheses.
Okay.
Back at Me. Because the hook is like,
one thing I hate as a radio host, by the way,
this parentheses.
I realized this today because you I don't know, you have the outro of a song, maybe it fades out perfectly,
mm-hmm.
and as a radio host, you can get on there and really catch the last tiny particles of the song
mm-hmm.
and go like, hey, this was, I don't know, make the marker with Little Doggy or something, whatever.
Right.
Little Doggy's March. Mm-hmm. And then people have these song titles. It's like, Walking into the park, and then
parentheses, another day at the park, lost in the woods forever, a fountain stream.
Another day I didn't shoot myself, or whatever. And you're like, how am I to call this?
There's no catchiness to it. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I worried about that with Stoned, because, of course, Stoned is a perfect way to summarize it, but it's not a song about, like...
Yeah, but still, I wish I hadn't got stoned is a catchy phrase, because... I always have this barrier in my mind. How do I spell...
Hadn't?
No. Because I always had got stoned.
I don't even know what, like, hadn't is, bro.
No. But how the artist wants to have the part of the title within the... I forgot the word again.
In parentheses.
Yeah. How to spell that? Like, should there be a little break in between, or is it still one kind of phrase?
That depends, yeah.
And it can really
mm-hmm.
Be something different. Like, and a lot of people or a lot of bands and artists I really love have this. And like, then there's a title, this band I really love, you know them as well, Car Seat Headrest.
Oh, yeah.
And they do this so often. I don't know. They have one song which is called 1937. And then something like something with State Park. And then I imagine, okay, if I, in my job as a radio host, was on the air, how would I spell that? Like, okay, maybe there's a little gag in it I don't get.
Yeah.
And. But should it still be one phrase or one sentence or whatever?
Yeah.
Or something totally different?
You don't know how to phrase it, how to make it flow.
And I think, but the funny thing is, I only have this issue as a radio host, as a listener, when I open Apple Music or I buy a vinyl.
Right.
And check the track list. I really like it. And the next thing is, mm-hmm. then they have this kind of titles,
yeah.
and then there are three other artists featured on that. As regulars, how are you supposed to do that? You're like, okay, this is Mac DeMarco with, and then like, with, I don't know, this guy, that girl, and this guy, and the song's name is,
That's actually pretty accurate. Yeah, the song name is like,
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, I never imagined how difficult it must have been for radio DJs to play songs from the masterpiece record, Come On, Feel the Illinois, from Sufjan Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
It's hands down, probably in my top two, maybe my number one favorite album of all time. And every single song title is like a huge statement, or it's a big... exclamation of some type, except for one or two examples. There's like a song called Jacksonville. There's a song called John Wayne Gacy Jr.
Yeah.
But most of them are song titles like The Black Hawk War, or How to Demolish an Entire Civilization and Still Feel Good About Yourself in the Morning, or We Apologize for the Inconvenience, but You're Going to Have to Leave Now, or I Have Fought the Big Knives and Will Continue to Fight Them Until They Are Off Our Lands. That's a song title. One song.
That's one song title.
That's one song.
Dude.
Or the best one. Sorry.
It sounds like four book chapters.
The best one. They are night zombies. They are neighbors. They have come back from the dead. Ah! And that is probably one of the best songs on the album.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I know people like my mom are going to hear that and think that these songs are like heavy metal, crazy, disgusting, and disturbing songs. They are gorgeous, simple, beautiful orchestra, like violins and cellos and acoustic guitar and harmonies. It's like one of the most amazing albums ever made.
Yeah.
And how do you play these songs on the radio without Like, do you just say, like, and that was Night Zombies by Sufjan Stevens? And you can't say the title the way that they write it.
This could be, at some stations, be a reason to not play a song.
Sure. Because you can't, like, are you allowed to summarize? If not, can I play the song?
Yeah, exactly. You know? Because I have to struggle, mostly because I don't want to offend the artist.
Sure, sure.
Because I don't want to, I don't know. Because you had thoughts when you most of the time people had thoughts when they
make the title.
When they make the title.
Yeah.
And I don't want to mess that up. Just like if you're a nice person,
yeah,
you take care that you spell a person's name right.
Of course. Or you pronounce it right.
Pronounce it right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing. But I see, especially since I work at a station where we play a lot of indie music from the last 20 years, there's been a kind of a trend towards those extra long and super crazy song titles. And
can't be worse than the one I just did.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, but it still is some form of... it's still also a form of art if you are able to express what you feel about the song in, I don't know, a word or a short phrase or whatever. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That still could be. And there are still titles that are a bit longer that work well, that have a kind of flow. Like, I wish I hadn't got stoned today. Super easy, super simple, works good. Or legendary album, Arctic Monkeys, whatever people say I am, that's what I am not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are still things that work.
But then they had Humbug. And that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to be too hard for them to just say, like, that was Smiling Back at Me by Jordan Prince or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
That's
okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
But that one's going to be, that's why I wanted to bring it up. We're getting it. It's getting mastered right now. This week.
Ooh.
It's getting mastered right now.
Out of the blue, there comes the good news.
Yeah. I mean, basically, so I'm doing this kind of early in comparison to Stoned, because what happened with Stoned is that we had Crooked Rail, and from May until August, that's kind of all I thought about and was only focusing on, like, different little marketing techniques. How can I reintroduce it to people who hadn't thought about it in a while, whatever, whatever. And then I just kind of got lazy and thought about my personal life and stuff with my job and with everything going on in my personal life. And
which is still important.
Which is even more important.
Which is now great, because now you're in a situation from beginning of next year on, you should not do that too much, but partly you can combine those things.
Right, right.
Like your job is to think about how to bring music to people.
Right, exactly, exactly.
And make them enjoy it.
Right, right. And with this, so the problem was that we, right up until, like, okay, so the song comes out November 13th, and maybe the standard procedure is that you have it sent out to distribution at least 4 weeks ahead of time, because that's the standard window that you give it out for press to give it a look over, for playlisters to give it time to see if it can be considered for the editorial playlists,
yeah,
to see if it fits into... any little windows of press, review, marketing ability, whatever. 4 weeks is like the prime time window. And it was like 5 weeks before. And the label was like, hey, we need Stoned. We don't have the master mix. Where is it? And I freaked out because I was like, oh no. Like, I have it ready, but I hadn't mastered it yet. And I had realized that I hadn't sent it yet. And then it was just this rush job where I was like, I had to ask Tim to rush. Then he had to ask the mastering guy to rush. We had to make sure the last mix was the right mix. We had to hear the master, make sure the master worked. We had to get the artwork done. The video was already being pushed to the very last second, like I talked about on the last episode. So it was just all kind of like too stressful for me.
And now you're pretty early.
And I was like, you know what? I know that Smilin's done. It's a very simple song.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go ahead and like listen to it again. I listened to it on headphones, on my phone, and on my laptop. The last mix is great. It's great. So I wrote Tim and I said, hey, listen to it again in your studio. Make sure that you don't hear any imperfections, like from a producer's ear.
Yeah.
And if you're happy, I'm happy. And he's like, hey, man, it's great. I'm going to send it off. So now Christian, this great guy who's mastering this record, is looking at it today. I got the notification. He's looking at it already.
That's so
we're
nice.
We're going to have the master. I hope I sent him the IRC code. I need to write that down.
What is an IRC code?
ISRC. IRC code. Smiling. An IRC code is the identification number for each song that's put into the world. So that's how royalty collection agencies can claim that that song has been played.
Okay.
So every single song that's registered with GEMA, BMI, ASCAP has an IRC code. It's an identifier.
I think I've heard another name for this.
So when it's played on your station, exactly. Ego, whatever, it's a code that's registered like 0 1s, you know, like binary. It's like that song was played. Same thing with an album. They have a UPC code. So if that album is sold on iTunes or by vinyl or shipping, whatever, UPC claims that song, here's the code, the song was sold, or the album was sold, whatever. I need to make sure he has that because he said he was looking at it, but I don't remember sending him the code. Anyway, but now we're going to have that. I'm already planning the cover art. I just want to have that done so I can only brainstorm the video and have a lot of time for that. Obviously, I can have like almost 2 months to brainstorm. I can have over 2 months to brainstorm the video, you know? So that's the new thing. And then I think we should finish with this because we have some Nintendo Switch to play.
Oh, yes, finally.
I brought it. And the last thing, the last good news, just to round out the show, is that we are getting a dog.
Nice! What kind of dog?
I'm going to show you a picture.
First of all, there are wrong choices.
Not in this case. This, my friend, is... it's a temporary name, but this is maybe Polly.
Oh my freaking God. How cute is that?
It's an adorable little puppy. It's so,
sweet.
It's a girl, and we're thinking of calling her Polly. We don't have a confirmed name yet.
But that is you. You already got to meet her. Nice.
We got to meet her last night.
Nice.
And we talked with the owner, the breeder.
You gotta send me this picture. It's so cute.
It's so cute. It's like painful. She was perfect. She was very docile and very relaxed. She just came out of the cage and just kind of sat in front of me and I rubbed her back. And then she looked at me and she seemed very calm and she rolled over and I scratched her belly and she just kind of just laid there. And it was like, that's the kind of dog I want. Just a very not so dominant, just relaxed and sweet and kind little, like doughy eyed little dog. And I think it's easier for Efi too because she's only used to cats. This is her first dog ever.
Are you experienced with dogs?
Very, very.
Ah, yeah, from family.
Yeah,
sure.
Because my mom, we've always had dogs.
Yeah.
It's good that I have that experience because she's overthinking things. She's a bit nervous, but it's understandable. She's never been around that before. Yeah. And I'm glad that I can help with that and like do a little extra work that first year, help her get through the stuff that maybe is a bit frustrating because it is going to be work when they're puppies. But then it's going to be this like super imprinted, attached relationship. And it's just this positive thing in the house.
How old is she now?
It's like 10 or 11 weeks.
Okay.
So the breeder and Polly will make a visit to our place tomorrow just to make sure we're not living in some slum or whatever. And then, the contract signed. We reserved it. We fell in love. And we're going to...
Contract?
Yeah. We basically signed a reservation contract saying that, like, we want to reserve this dog for sure. And if we, let's say, in like a few days changed our minds, like really suddenly, then we would have to owe the breeder a small fee for reserving because
the small dog.
We owe the small dog a pack of cigarettes. yeah, man.
But what do you pay for a dog like this?
It's expensive.
Yeah.
it's really surprising. I mean, the whole dog system in Germany is very different from the dog system in America. Basically, in America, you go to a shelter or you go to like a pet store.
Yeah.
Where they have all these pets, like from fish to lizards to cats to snakes to dogs, everything for sale. And you can play with them, you can test with them, you can see if they're all checked, health, impfungen, like vaccines, worms, shots, everything, they're all ready to go. And you just go in and play with them and be like, that, I even like
drive-thrus.
That one.
People don't know that.
It's drive-thrus. Yeah, yeah.
In Mississippi, they have drive-thrus.
It's drive-thru puppy purchase. I'll have a sausage and egg biscuit and I'll get that Bichon Frise and I'll get a Diet Coke. And you know what? I'll get a couple magazines to go with it and maybe a shotgun. Bichon Frise. That's for you, Mom. I know you. I love you. We always, she loves this dog, Bichon Frise. But yeah, we finally decided to get a dog and it's all, it's going to be basically, Efi's birthday is Sunday. So I'm helping to pay for it. Her sister's helping to pay for it. And then her parents are paying the brunt of it because it's going to be her birthday and our Christmas present all together. It's
sweet.
Big, big expensive endeavor, but I'm really excited about it. And
it's super nice.
I'll let you know if the name changes, but right now we're looking at Polly. We went into it wanting to name her, well, we didn't know it was going to be a girl, but we went into it wanting to have a dog named Larry. Because we thought it was funny.
It's super nice. A dog named Larry. That also makes for a great next album title.
A dog named Larry.
A dog named Larry.
That's not bad. We were in the park the other day and we heard people, they like their dog ran off too far and they were calling the name and they were like, Lucky, Lucky. And I was like, wouldn't it be funny if you had a dog named like Debbie? Debbie!
Yeah, but with Larry, I imagine, I don't know, an elderly guy from Eastern Germany. Larry! Larry! Yeah.
Exactly. He comes back like, wow, was ist los? Was ist passiert? Oh man, but dude, yeah,
but that's so nice.
I'm really pumped about it. Woo! And all right, let's play some Switch, huh? You ready?
Yes.
All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's show, you're probably listening on Spotify or Apple Music, but you can go and you can give us a review or a rating or a comment. You can share the show online or just talk about us with word of mouth. It really goes a long way and it really helps new listeners find the show. Again, like Mo said earlier, if you haven't seen the video for the Crooked Rail, it's on my YouTube, Jordan Prince. You can find it through my Instagram at Jordan Prince. And if you would like to contact us, if you're an artsy fartsy immigrant, Mo, how can they find us?
Also on Instagram at artsy fartsy immigrants. Or if you're more like, if you get a serious request or more like an old fashioned guy. You can send us an email to podcast@m945.de.
Thank you so much, guys. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Look out, baby. The Saints are coming through. And it's all over now, baby blue.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prince und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.